Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Everybody, good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you're joining us from. Thank you for joining today's webinar, U.S. Hemp Authority Mid-Year in Review 2023. Before we get started, I'm going to show you all the questions tab. If you have any questions, just be sure to click the drop-down menu and you'll be able to type in any questions you have, and we'll be sure to answer them before the presentation's over. And with that, I'll hand it over to Brett, our Cannabis and Hemp Division Manager.
Thanks, Stone. Welcome, everybody. Just wanted to say hello and excited about talking about USHA, US Hemp Authority, and kind of a mid-year review where we're at, where we've been. On board, we have Jonathan Miller and Dr. Mariel Weintraub. And today we're going to be talking about where we're at through the year. But first of all, you know, who are the Perry Johnson companies? Why are we here? We're honored to be the certification body of record for the U.S. Hemp Authority. We are a collective group of over 70 companies focused on quality certifications, ISO, good manufacturing practices, and food safety. Our corporate headquarters are in Troy, Michigan, and we have offices around the globe. So today, we have Jonathan Miller, who's the U.S. Hemp Roundtable and the U.S. Hemp Authority Legal Counsel. And we also have Dr. Mariel Weintraub, who's the president of the U.S. Hemp Authority. And first of all, we're going to start off today speaking with Jonathan about what's going on in the legislative world of hemp right now around the United States, what's coming on board in different states, and what we're seeing out there on the radar. Jonathan, I haven't seen you since the NOCO conference in Colorado Springs, which was great to see everybody there, which is a very good conference, and enjoyed your presentation. And I'll hand it over to you just to kind of give a brief overview of where we're at.
Thanks, Brett. It's been a frustrating few years for the hemp and CBD industry, and a lot of that is largely due to the FDA's refusal to this point to develop a regulatory structure for hemp and CBD. The year started off on a down note where the FDA finally, after 4.5 years of studying this, came to the conclusion that neither the dietary supplement path or the food and beverage path for regulating CBD would be available. We completely, as an industry, disagree with their analysis. They focus on studies that look at pharmaceutical grade CBD with thousands of milligrams and the adverse effects that sometimes happen with those, and ignore the more than a dozen studies of the products that are out there on the marketplace that have far less milligrams of CBD. And so it was a quite frustrating time. However, things behind the scenes seem to have turned a bit, and I think largely due to the FDA's inaction, Congress is really starting to get ready to develop a regulatory pathway. It might build on the dietary supplement food and beverage. It might be something that is a bit new, but there is a sense of urgency, and a real sense of urgency to make this happen before the end of this year. We have a historic opportunity given that 2023 is a year for the Farm Bill, and is a Farm Bill in 2014 created hemp's pilot programs, in 2018 permanently legalized hemp. Now in 2023, this could be the vehicle through which hemp and CBD are finally recognized, legalized, and regulated. What that's going to look like is still unknown. The U.S. Hemp Roundtable is working behind the scenes with members of Congress to come up with a strategy that is both reasonable, but also cracks down on some of those who are abusing the system. It lends even more importance to the important work that the U.S. Hemp Authority does. Once this regulatory regime is in place, and again, it could be as soon as this year, the FDA is going to start demanding that companies start following good manufacturing practices if they don't do already, truth in labeling, adverse effect reporting, all the kinds of things that FDA regulation requires, and also all of the types of things that are within the U.S. Hemp Authority's mandate. So companies that sign up now for the U.S. Hemp Authority and get certified are going to be in the catbird seat when it comes to the ultimate FDA regulation of these products. You will be months ahead of other companies that will be trying to quickly catch up when it comes to making sure that you've got the good manufacturing practices. And we do believe that the U.S. Hemp Authority's seal of approval certification standard is something that regulators will respect and will be helpful to those of you that are trying to comply with that. Now, worst case scenario, FDA continues to dawdle. There still is a lot of work going on at the state level, and many more states have been developing regulatory regimes for hemp and CBD, and that has continued furiously where states are requiring manufacturing quality assurance or requiring transparent labeling. And so again, even with the FDA not yet playing ball, the U.S. Hemp Authority's certification seal of approval will be important in getting your products to stand out at the state level. So it's a time of great fluidity and a time of great optimism. And we're hopeful that, again, 2023 will be a significant year for the industry. But if you do want to be prepared, be ready on day one for this new regime, the best thing you can do as a manufacturer is to sign up for U.S. Hemp Authority and get into the system and start developing a top quality manufacturing practice.
Okay, good. Aside from what's happening on the federal level, are there any particular states or situations right now that are underway with additional regulations or things that, you know, where we all need to know about or team up as industry members to help with any particular state situation that's happening?
Yeah, one of the great challenges is that we're getting a real patchwork of state regulations and different states have been coming up with different guidelines. Some states are further down the line than others. Colorado has a very specific set of rules, or Oregon does as well. Some other states, you don't see anything. But there is a consistent pattern, and the consistent pattern is the desire for transparency and labeling and good manufacturing practices. So again, having that U.S. Hemp Authority certification is going to give you an edge up.
Okay, good. Well, thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate the insight on that. Maybe this might be a good way to segue with Dr. Mariel, the president of the U.S. Hemp Authority. Always good to have you on board too. And in terms of the U.S. Hemp Authority program and certification, I'm going to change the slide here so you can talk about some of those things. And maybe some of these situations in the news and things like that with the certification program, if you want to just give us a brief overview of U.S. Hemp Authority, kind of its history and where things are at right now.
Sure. So thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be able to speak to those interested in the Hemp Authority program. For those of you who don't know, the U.S. Hemp Authority Certification Program is our industry's initiative to provide high standards, best practices, and self-regulation, giving consumers and retailers confidence in hemp and CBD products. What's so interesting is, and something that Jonathan said, was that it's been kind of a frustrating ride only because we seem to revisit similar events and similar sentiments and similar headlines year after year, but what holds true is the goal of the U.S. Hemp Authority. We have always set up our program to stay ahead of regulatory curve, like the regulatory curve. We have always wanted transparency of products, transparency of labels, easy to understand products, and fit into the legal scheme as provided by the Farm Bill. As we continue to grow our program, we started back in 2018, really closer to 2017, and then established the program in 2018 after we realized the importance of needing a self-regulatory body in this very large growing industry. It was at the beginning of 2019 when our seal started to was granted at that time to 13 companies, and we've continued to grow since then. We wanted to make sure that when you saw or when a consumer saw the U.S. Hemp Authority certified seal, that they knew that it was a product that could be trusted, it was an authentic product, it was a quality assured product, labels were transparent, that it was products that were made from hemp. So we want to make sure that it is a hemp-derived product. We want to support the hemp farmers that were able to start making this great plant and growing it again because of the Farm Bill. So we wanted to make sure that we were certifying products that people could trust, that regulators knew were authentic, and continue to grow from there and earn the public's trust with our certification.
Good, and I can tell you from a certification body standpoint, working with your checklist and the program that you guys have created based on GMP tenants, that the companies we've worked with so far to maintain their certifications and add them, they're taking this seriously. They have the SOPs and the documentation and the paperwork in place, as well as the scientific backing on the products that they're making, like you discussed, having things tested by a third party accredited lab, knowing what their suppliers, are they GMP certified and or USHA certified for those things. So it's important, but for those of you tuning in, there are a lot of companies out there making very good, clean, credible products that are backing up the industry, and hopefully on the legislative end, through Jonathan, that eventually we'll get to the point of having those products out there. Obviously, you'd gone over why choosing U.S. Hemp Authority certification, is important. And we kind of talked about this a little bit before the broadcast, Marielle, about certain types of products, what we're seeing out there in the industry, what's allowed, what's not allowed. I had an interesting phone call last week with a company that is doing without letting the cat out of the bag, they're basically doing a skincare product, if you will. And without making any particular product claims, it's interesting what they're doing and how they're trying to list it in terms of a over the counter. It's definitely not a food. It's not a dietary supplement. So do you want to expand on that a little bit in terms of what's the best way for somebody in that type of a product to think about that coming to market?
Sure. When we're talking about things like lotions or cleansers, you're going to fall into one of two categories under FDA's guidelines. So you're either going to be a cosmetic or you're going to be what's called a topical. That term is not always used correctly in the cannabis industry because some people think of topicals as just lotions or balms. The difference between that is cosmetics are regulated in a different manner than the topicals. So different than those OTC topicals. The topicals can have once they submit and have OTC numbers, can have the structure function claim. They can be things like lidocaine that create a numbing sense on the skin for purposes. When we're talking about products with cannabinoids in them, skincare is very common or becoming more common. There are lotions, there are balms, there are salves. Listing yourself as a cosmetic and not making a structure function claim is probably a better bet based on FAQs and past pages of what FDA had to say. They never really picked on the cosmetics because they are not eaten. They don't go inside your system. They go on top of your, on top of the body. They are developed to either cleanse or beautify. Those are the only two things you can say about a cosmetic. Whereas if you're in the realm of OTC, I have yet to see, I know, and I could be wrong, but I've yet to see an OTC product with an active ingredient as a cannabinoid. So I've seen some where the cannabinoids are inactive ingredients, but not the active ingredient. So making claims in the realm of CBD products is still very, very risky. And we actually, unless you have the ability to prove it and FDA has approved you, I don't believe that the US Hemp Authority certification program will allow you to be making claims, because that's still one very big red flag for FDA. It's low hanging fruit for FDA auditors. They will come get you. They will come get you quickly. I think there was a House committee asking FDA to increase enforcement against CBD claims. So we don't want to do that. So if you are in the world of making lotions or ourselves or bombs, and you are including cannabinoids, your best bet is to stay on the cosmetic side. The only thing you can say is that they're beautifying or cleansing. But that does allow you to make those products. You have the ability to test those products. Testing for cosmetics is not very different than testing for dietary supplements. You still have to look for heavy metals, residual solvents, pesticides, and there's an additional micro that you want to look for, because you don't want to accidentally cause a problem in someone's skin, for instance, if they have an open sore, and use your product.
Okay, well, thank you. That's a great explanation. I'm gonna flip the slide here for a second. Actually, let's go back one because we're not done yet. The other thing that came up with it being 4th of July, and we kind of broached on this, is, you know, we've had some questions and some folks reaching out on pets and the 4th of July and fireworks and, you know, can I give my dog a CBD something or other to help, you know, calm them down without getting into the realm of, you know, making a claim, even though there's products out there for pets and, you know, people swear by them. Do you want to talk about how the USHA is looking at just, you know, pet products and CBD just in general? And then, you know, maybe we can talk about the 4th of July and how folks can think about that.
Sure. We, when it comes to pet products, we do certify pet supplements. Pet supplements is a term that's not necessarily recognized by the FDA, but they do exist on the market. And we do allow for pet products to have cannabinoids in them as long as they are not single source nutrition. So we can't have a cannabinoid-based pet food. Pet food is its whole different realm. It's called a single source nutrition because it is the one place they get all of their nutrition from. But we can add in supporting pet supplements. And we do. We do have some certified groups. Some of the marketing I see around cannabinoid-based pet supplements has to do with 4th of July and 4th of July fireworks. So it's a very short term environmentally, I guess it's an environmentally caused moment of stress or a stressful situation that is short-lived. But I do know, and we do see marketing around July 4th for pets, but you do again have to be very careful and assess your risk when it comes to making marketing claims, and to recognize that there are rules, including around using the term stress. And so be very, very careful with your marketing, but the Hemp Authority does certify hemp supplements, and we have companies who are already certified on our website that do carry pet supplements. And I have some really great feedback if you read the reviews of some of these companies.
So does the FDA, for the most part, handle pet products and CBD and claims just the same as things for humans? Or are there any differences, or I don't want to say loopholes, but are there any advantages to being in the pet market for that right now versus the human market, or is everything pretty much under one umbrella for that?
So a lot of it is carried under the same umbrella. What you're really going to see, though, is that FTC is going to write people up for making claims, FDA has the FDA rules and their requirements for GMP, and the ideas of not making structure function claims without support, but it is FTC that's going to go after you for making those claims. Jonathan, have you seen anything recently where FTC has rolled out anything new, or where FDA is aiming for certain types of claims, or is FTC aiming for certain types of claims? Have you seen anything new there?
Yeah, it's been at least a year since FTC has come up with warning letters. And the last focus of the FDA's warning letters, which were several months ago, was more on children and making sure that companies don't market to kids. So I haven't seen anything recently on pets.
And so one of the items, or a couple of different things I saw at the NOCO event in Colorado Springs, and this is kind of changing a little bit, is more on the industrial hemp end of things, Jonathan. And I don't know if there's a lot of legislative situations out there compared to CBD and human product, but, you know, animal bedding, things for the raw hemp plant being used in those types of situations. How is the United States right now in competition with the rest of the world for industrial hemp applications and things like that coming online? Are we seeing a lot of growth there, or were you able to get your finger on the pulse of that at the conference?
You know, there's some growth going on, and there definitely the potential is enormous. There are a couple challenges. One is a number of farmers find the regulatory burdens of growing hemp to be too difficult, and so in the 2023 Farm Bill, there are going to be efforts to try to ease some of the regulatory burdens to make it easier for farmers who are growing for fiber and for grain to grow without all of the background checks and all of the sampling and testing requirements that you need for the flower. The other challenge is it's quite expensive to process hemp fiber, and it requires a lot of infrastructure. But that's slowly and surely becoming more apparent. More processors for fiber are appearing across the country, and as that grows, and as USDA support for hemp, particularly as a climate-friendly crop, grows, I think you'll see that industry flourish. I mean, the long-term future for hemp, I think, is going to be on the fiber side. It is where the greatest, largest opportunity is. But still right now, most of the action and investment is on the flower and CBD side.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thanks for the insight on that. Just to maybe kind of end with this, Mariel, in terms of the certification process with USHA, we know what kind of items are being reviewed. As an auditing body or certification body, what we've come up against is not really the quality of the product as much as the SOPs and the documentation and things like that are in place. So I don't know if you've come across that in the early years of the USHA or what you've seen it at other companies, but you know, it's like the old ISO adage of document what you do and do what you document. Did you want to maybe expound on that a little bit in terms of how important SOPs are trickling down into what the product is that you're actually making and how to defend those?
Absolutely. It makes me think of my niece who is 16, wanted to put pictures of my brother's wedding with pictures of her and I online because she was in a dress and very rarely wears one. And she's like, if it's not on Facebook, it didn't happen. Right. So if it's not documented, it didn't occur. And the same goes for good manufacturing processes. And there are very specific rules. You can find them in 21 CFR 111 if you are a supplement, or 117. If you are a food, but there's very specific information that you need to keep documented. And when we're talking about testing, everyone always asks me, what do you have to test? What do you test first? Why are you going to test that? How do you know what to test? And the answer comes down to having a specification. So I also think this was a big miss in the beginning years, where people didn't realize how important it was that you needed a specification for each and every one of your products. And in that specification is where you create almost your label claim, right? So it's where you say, we want this amount of cannabinoid or this much CBD. We want 0.3% or less or 0.1% or less THC, depending on what type of product you're making. But it's also where you have your allowable limits for your heavy metals, for your pesticides, for your residual solvents. And a lot of that is going to be based off of either the state you live in or the EPA or other federal guidance, depending on what we're talking about when it comes to, let's say, pesticides. You're going to look at EPA, heavy metals. If you're in the state of California, you want to pay attention to Prop 65. So it's going to come down to where you live, but understanding what is acceptable and what is not acceptable in your product is how you want to set up your specification. And you want those set prior to beginning testing, because without a specification, you have nothing to test against. So you don't actually know if your product passes or doesn't. In order to create specifications, you also have to have standard operating procedures. You want to have all of these documents and a way to show how you documented, why you documented, and when you documented, in order to survive things like either an audit from our friends from PJ, or if FDA decides to stop by your facility at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning, because that's when they like to come by. So understanding the paperwork behind it, if you have questions, or if, let's say, you don't know what a standard operating procedure is, or you've never seen an SOP, Hemp Authority works closely with APA. It's one of the, it's the American Herbal Products Association. It's a trade association that has always been very welcoming to cannabis and cannabinoid groups. They, on their website, have actually have these free documents where you can download a specification form that's empty and a template. You can download other forms you need in order to create things like SOPs, in order to create these manufacturing records that you need. So getting grips and understanding what is required in order to qualify as good manufacturing practice and what kind of documentation is needed is key to being able to pass our Hemp Authority certification, but also behaving in a way that shows that you care about your company, that you show that you care about your consumer, setting yourself up to be the best kind of company that when FDA comes around and when they decide what kind of regulatory system they want to put us in, you're going to need these types of documents. You're going to need SOPs. You're going to need specifications. You're going to need master manufacturing records. And being prepared for that early just keeps us all ahead of the curve and keeps our industry in a trustworthy position when we're talking about regulators and how they see us.
That's a great point. Thank you for that. Yeah, especially if, you know, as is one of the requirements of a mock recall, which could also maybe go in parallel with a mock FDA knock on the door at 9 a.m. on Monday morning, like you mentioned, you might as well, you know, treat it the same way. So, okay, well, Jonathan, Marielle, I really appreciate you guys being here. If there's, you know, any other questions or points you wanted to bring up, we're happy to put those out there right now. So far, it's been a good year with USHA and Perry Johnson. We you know, obviously enjoy working with you guys. And for those of you tuning in, I can't tell you how much of a breath of fresh air it's been working with the USHA and the amount of resources and knowledge that they have at their disposal for folks in the industry. So the value of being with USHA goes, I think, even beyond just the, you know, looking at it as a certificate, as much as what Jonathan said, to, you know, being prepared for the future and having those things in place, and what Marielle said concerning, you know, keeping a clean, safe product out there and being ready for a potential knock on the door from the FDA, or God forbid some kind of a recall happens, you have the right things in place to stop any problems that may have happened in your supply chain. So Stone, I'm gonna wrap this up here. I'm gonna click ahead one more time to the final slide. If any of you tuning in are interested in information with the USHA, you know, give them a shot at the website. If you're interested in information on getting certified for USHA, GMP, ISO programs, things of that nature, please do reach out to us. So again, Jonathan and Marielle, thank you so much for being on board. If we don't talk before the 4th of July, have a great holiday break. And, you know, we'll hit the ground running after the 4th of July.
Excellent. Thank you for having us.
Okay.
Thanks for having us, Brad.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Have a great rest of your day, and thanks for tuning in.